When we teach children about Thanksgiving, we tell them about pilgrims, Native Americans, and turkeys. But Thanksgiving is more of a modern holiday. It didn't become official until 1863. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we'll explore the history of Thanksgiving. We'll find out how the holiday was celebrated during the Civil War and how Iowans made it their own. I'll talk with Catherine Mormond of Old Capitol Museum in Iowa City, Greg Prickman, head of special collections at the University of Iowa Library, and Laura Sullivan, an archivist at Iowa State University's library. We'd love to hear from you as well. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're going to explore the history of Thanksgiving, not all the way back to the Pilgrims, but we'll talk about how Thanksgiving was celebrated through the years, how it became an official holiday, and how it has evolved over the years after that. Of course, we'll also be talking about food and historical recipes this hour. My guests today are Catherine Mormond, Education and Outreach Coordinator for Old Capitol Museum in Iowa City. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here. Greg Prickman is here. He is Head of Special Collections at the University of Iowa Library. Thank you, Greg, for being here.
Thanks.
And also Laura Sullivan is Assistant Archivist of Special Collections and University Archives at the Iowa State University Library. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. And Catherine, I want to start with you. I know you probably all have a grasp on the history of this holiday, but we do tend to focus on the Pilgrims and the Native Americans and the turkey. How, before there was a proclamation made, before Thanksgiving became an official holiday, how was it celebrated in the United States?
Well, I believe it was celebrated in different states at different times throughout October and November, and it was more of a harvest festival of sorts and giving thanks to the great provider and everything. And I'm not exactly sure.
Okay. Greg, you look like you want to jump in there.
Well, I think you're exactly right. It tended to be a very local celebration, and I think we associate Thanksgiving with food, and I think that's probably always been the case. I think it was always something to celebrate food and the harvest, and it was very local, very community or family based.
Mm-hmm. And it seems to almost make more sense to celebrate it whenever the harvest is in your area,
right.
But as we get closer to the Civil War, 1863 was when the proclamation was made.
Right.
How did that come about?
Well, there was a gal named Sarah Josepha Hale who had been in working on getting Thanksgiving to be a national holiday for several years. She wrote, and she was the editor of Godey's Lady's Book for quite some time. And in 1827, she wrote the novel Northwood and mentioned in New England, a traditional New England Thanksgiving. And since then, or up until actually 1863, she had been writing governors and writing presidents. And it wasn't until 1863 that it kind of her cry kind of hit home for President Lincoln. And she kind of thought that it would be a wonderful unifying opportunity for the nation, or, you know, for the Union, and a great opportunity to support the soldiers. And so sure enough, Lincoln thought, oh, yes, this would be good, and made the proclamation. And then that that November in 1863, it was celebrated.
The first official Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
National holiday. Mm-hmm. And even after that, the date varied mm-hmm. widely, mm-hmm. Even after it was declared a national holiday.
Right. Was that a political decision to move the holiday around a little bit, or do we know why that happened?
Well, it was kind of, you see through history, else? Well,
and we don't. Well, maybe we don't know the motives behind the moving of the holiday.
It's kind of confusing because we celebrate it on the third
Thursday.
Right. Mm-hmm. And for quite some time, it was celebrated later in November on the last Thursday. And then I believe this time, or when Lincoln declared it, it was on the fourth Thursday. And so, it's kind of been jumping around.
And it's celebrated in December. I have an entry from a Civil War diary about it's Thanksgiving Day, and it's December 7th. That was 1865. So it did move around. I think it wasn't until the 20th century that, that it finally becomes
solidified on this week, this date. Of course, 1863 is when that proclamation was made. And Greg, you have been looking through Civil War diaries. As those first official Thanksgivings were celebrated, what are you reading about the celebrations in people's diaries?
Well, 1863, I mean, that is you're right in the middle of the war. It's not a great year, really. And there are certainly things to be thankful for, but there's a lot that's gone pretty poorly for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And in the diaries, there are some references to Thanksgiving. I have one. There's a letter from a soldier, Thomas Rescomb Stearns, writing home. Let's see if I can just grab it here. And he briefly mentions he's in camp at the time. He says, "Yesterday was Thanksgiving. We got up an excellent dinner composed of them crackers I told you about." And that's probably hardtack.
Yeah.
coffee, hominy, applesauce, meat, et cetera, et cetera. "Now, I tell you what, it was worth half a dollar a couple. You in the North could not have got up such a dinner to save your soul from liberty." And then he goes on and talks about his mother and all sorts of other things. But, you know, there's this sense that there were celebrations. It was noted. It was an occasion, regardless of the circumstances that people were in.
Well, and of course, circumstances, that diary talks about celebrating at war. But of course, on the home front, things were scarce as well. A lot of the men had been gone for a long time, and the women were holding things together at home. Do we know what some of those, and Laura, you can jump in on this too. Do we know what some of those early Thanksgiving dinners during the Civil War would have consisted of in Iowa on the home front?
Well,
anybody?
It would have been quite a selection, of course. You have your traditional fowl, an assortment of fowls. So turkey and chicken as well. I've seen a lot of chicken pie mentioned. And we know that the Thanksgiving was celebrated at the Old Capitol. Actually, back in, and we were talking about the dates before, 1861, Theodore S. Parvin, professor of natural philosophy and instructor of history and political economy, recorded in his diary, "Thanksgiving evening reunion of university and normal students." And we know that it was also celebrated in 1863 quite grandly with over 200 guests.
Wow.
But it's really tough to come across what they actually ate. So I've been looking at a lot of, like the recipe books and the cookbooks that were common during that time. So,
yeah, a lot of people note in their diaries something about the day, but they don't necessarily say what they ate.
Right, they didn't take pictures and post it on Facebook
like we all seem to now. Exactly. I have a diary entry, the one I mentioned in December 7th, 1865. And this was a woman writing. And there's another aspect as well besides the celebration of food, and that is the religious aspect of the holiday in that era. It really was a day of Thanksgiving in a religious sense as well. And she writes, "Thanksgiving Day, sewing most of the a.m., at 10:30 to church and heard an excellent sermon by Dr. Corkhill, then to Mrs. Darwin's to a fine Thanksgiving dinner." Of course, she doesn't then say what. But it was a fine Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah, right.
"The world so bright and lovely in the mantle of snow that covers everything." Hmm. And then she wrote some letters. "Evening went to a party at Mr. Bemmet's and enjoyed it pretty well for me. A long to be remembered day. So many pleasant things have occurred. A real Thanksgiving day." Hmm. And I think you do get a sense from the letters and the diaries of that time, a real sense of Thanksgiving, what that mm-hmm. means. Holidays were celebrated in a different way then, I think. There was a religious and a reflective aspect to them.
Right. Well, and then that's what Thanksgiving is all about. I mean, it's about the meal, but obviously in its name, it's meant to be a day of reflection mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. So we don't, of course, turkey is what we all think of now. We don't know really when that became the Thanksgiving food, though.
I'm certainly not aware.
I think there's like one document that dates back to the first group of pilgrims, mm-hmm. and it mentions them going fowling and catching several birds. So in the 1827 novel Northwood by Sarah Josepha Hale, she mentions the turkey being kind of at the centerpiece, high at the table and kind of... the spotlight.
So turkey was there often, at least in the early celebrations.
Mm-hmm. There were a lot of pigs around, too.
Yeah.
And I think it's quite likely that there was some ham being served as well. In the manuscript cookbooks, you'll see turkey and fowl instructions and recipes mm-hmm. right next to the ham and other pork recipes. So chances are there's some of both.
Right. Well, and there will be some of both
exactly.
tomorrow as well. I never saw my grandmother prepare a turkey.
I could read a bit from Northwood.
Sure.
Where she describes...
We have only about a minute left before we get to a break, but if it's brief.
Okay. It's not brief, so...
All right. Well, we'll get to that. We'll
section.
Get to that after. And we're going to start digging into recipes, because I know that you've all looked into the archives for recipes. And Laura, I know that you have discovered a lot of corn propaganda in your archives at Iowa State University. So we'll talk about corn as well in a couple of minutes, Laura. But you dug in and you found quite a lot about corn, didn't you?
Yes, yeah, I did. And, as we all know, corn's an important crop here in Iowa. And even back in the latter part of the 19th century, it was as well. And there's a book that was published on Indian corn as human food.
All right. Well, we'll find out about Indian corn as human food in just a moment. We also want to hear about the recipes that have been handed down in your family that will make it to the table on Thanksgiving. If you have a traditional recipe that always makes an appearance at Thanksgiving, let us know about it. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. My guests today are Catherine Mormond, Education and Outreach Coordinator of Old Capitol Museum in Iowa City, Greg Prickman, he's head of Special Collections at the University of Iowa Library, and Laura Sullivan, Assistant Archivist of Special Collections and University Archives at Iowa State University Library. This is Talk of Iowa.
Grateful for each hand we hold, gathered round this table. From far and near we travel home, blessed that we are able. Grateful for this sheltered place, with light in every window. Say welcome, welcome, share this feast. Come in away from sorrow. Father, mother, daughter, son, neighbor, friend, and friends, all together, everyone, in the gift of love.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we're talking about the history of Thanksgiving. We're going back to when Thanksgiving became an official holiday, how it was celebrated during the Civil War, how Iowans made it their own. And we'd love to hear from you. We're going to also talk about some recipes that have been carried down through the years in these special collections, and we'd love to hear from you as well. If there's a special recipe that always makes it to your Thanksgiving table, you can send us an email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can also give us a call at 866-780-9100 or tweet us at IPR Talk. With me right now, Catherine Mormont, Education and Outreach Coordinator of Old Capitol Museum in Iowa City. Greg Prickman, he is Head of Special Collections at the University of Iowa Library. And Laura Sullivan is Assistant Archivist of Special Collections and University Archives at Iowa State University Library. And Catherine, just before the break, I know that we'd been talking about how Thanksgiving moved around a little bit, and Abraham Lincoln, President Lincoln, was the first one to make it an official holiday, but President Roosevelt is the one that really marked the day, right?
Mm-hmm. Kind of solidified it with Congress.
Yeah.
because he had moved it up a day, I think, to the third Thursday in Thanksgiving, and that didn't sit well with everyone. In fact, I think 23 states were kind of upset about that. And so they celebrated on the fourth Thursday in Thanksgiving.
There was a rift in the nation then.
And it wasn't until 1941 that a law was actually passed by Congress that that it became the official day, the fourth Thursday in November.
The third Thursday in
fourth.
November.
Is it? No, fourth. Fourth. Because we have...
I'll have to count.
I know, this is the thing. It's so confusing.
Right. Well, and Greg, this was the stories that get passed down about this are that it was an economic decision, right?
Well, yeah, apparently that, you know, because the holiday would drift into December even, you're already encroaching on another holiday season. It's busy shopping time. So I think, yeah, there is some notion that there was a move to increase the amount of time for shopping.
All right. Did we settle that?
Yeah. I was trying to add a week to November.
Okay. So third. Apologize. All right. Well, let's start talking about recipes, too. And we want you to share your traditions as well. If there's a traditional recipe that makes it to your table every year, let us know about it. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Laura, let's talk a little bit about corn. Because we teased that a little bit, and you mentioned that you went back in the archives and you found a book called Indian Corn as Human Food. When does this, what's the publication date on that book?
It was published in 1889 by Mary Sophia Scott, who is, she lived in Nevada, Iowa, and helped out actually at several world fairs and everything and published this book on corn as human food. And it was her way of trying to promote the use of corn beyond just the simple recipes in bread and for use as animal feed.
And does she also reflect on the history of how the white settlers learned to grow corn and use it as food?
She mentions it, yes, that the Native Americans have used it as their as a staple of their food. And throughout the book, actually, when she's talking about how it used to be prepared and the traditions of preparing it, and it's only about 10, 15 pages, but she'll also bring in the Native Americans. For instance, they used dried corn to hang in a pot from a tripod outside of their wigwam to prevent the gaunt wolf from coming in. So it's kind of an interesting book, and she obviously, yes, knows that the Native Americans had corn and used it.
What are some of the ways that she suggests that people eat it? Of course, we eat corn in everything now, but what were some of her ideas?
She has quite a lot, actually, on cornbread, and there's also corn pudding, and she describes how to make hominy, which is a dried corn that has been treated with lye to help preserve it and to bring out some of the nutrients, which actually is coming back in now, but wasn't apparently at the time. So she describes several ways of doing that. It's kind of an interesting, there's an oak stump and you hovel it out and there's a burn it then to smooth it out and you grind the corn in there and that helps make the hominy. So
it seems it's hard to even imagine a time when we had to promote corn. It's something that we do take for granted in so many foods now. Do you have an idea of the environment in which she was writing this book?
It I don't know. The way she refers to corn also is kind of interesting. Didn't have a chance to go back and look at it, but it's called Indian corn and not just, you know, corn is human food. And then the report from the Columbian Exposition in Chicago, where she presented with another woman from her book, the committee that reported that it was in charge of doing this was the committee of, I don't remember exactly, it was forestry, photography, and corn food. So it, yeah, apparently they needed to promote it more as a common food and not just to be used in, I guess she points out it's used in bread, but it can be used for many, many other uses too. And she talks about salads and corn with tomatoes and pudding and everything. So she has a variety of recipes in the cookbook.
Oh, that's fascinating. And all of the collections that we're talking about today have some wonderful cookbooks and some wonderful recipes. And we're going to get to those in just a moment. We also want to hear from you. We had a little trouble with the phones earlier, so if you tried to call and didn't get through, try again. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Kitty is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Kitty.
Hello.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I just wanted to talk about a special tradition at the preschool where I work to teach the children about Thanksgiving.
What do you do?
So we have two preschool rooms, and one room dresses up like Native American, and then the other room dresses up like pilgrims. And we have a long feast table laid out across the entire room. And so the Native American children come meet the pilgrim children, and we have this little feast together. We have little pats of butter, little corns, cotton balls for mashed potatoes, and chicken legs. They can have however many chicken legs they want. And they shake hands across the table. So there's a real spirit of collaboration. And we work on their manners, so we're teaching them to please test, and they have to ask for the glue so that they can glue on all these different items onto their feast platter. So it's a very special tradition that we've done for years.
Oh, that's wonderful, and I'm sure it's something they never forget.
Never.
That's wonderful. Is there any real food involved?
No real food involved. Just the imagination is enough at that age.
All right, Kitty, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you, Charity.
And you can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Greg, you have been working on a project transcribing handwritten cookbooks from the Civil War era. Tell me about that.
That's right. Actually, not just from the Civil War era. We have a project. We call it DIY History. And that's because the whole point of this is to create something that anyone can participate in if you have any kind of an interest. It's a site online. We digitize material. We started with Civil War letters and diaries and asked people to transcribe the text that they saw, the written, handwritten text, because when we digitize something, we're basically making an image of a page. You can't search any of that text.
Right.
So the transcription allows you to search through all of that information. And that project was successful. We transcribed over 14,000 pages in less than a year with participation from people all over the world. So then as we were thinking, what can we add to this system to expand it and keep the project going, we decided to go with cookbooks. We have a very large cookbook collection at the University of Iowa. It's the Zathmary Collection. That's Chef Louis Zathmary, who was the original collector. One portion of his collection are handwritten cookbooks. So these are manuscript pieces that someone would write out recipes with pen and ink. And then, you know, they may even pass that book down to someone in their family and they would add to it. So there's different styles of handwriting in some of these books. These go back to the 17th century.
Wow.
There's quite a few from the 18th century and then 19th century as well. And what we have online right now are American cookbooks. We're in the process of finishing up the scanning of the English cookbooks, and then we have some German and a few others as well. So if you go to diyhistory.lib.uiowa.edu, you can pick a cookbook that looks interesting and open it up to a page and just start transcribing what you see. And what this then will create is a system where you can search for, say, turkey or apple pie or whatever you're interested in, and get the results from different cookbooks from different time periods, and compare. You know, the because they're not published, they're handwritten, the amount of information in the recipes varies hugely from one to another. Some are quite detailed. Some are very, very brief. But you also get...
Looking at older cookbooks, it seems like there is often an assumption of knowledge that we don't have now.
That's absolutely right.
That you're going to have a particular skill set when you open mm-hmm. this cookbook
right.
and
mm-hmm.
you can use this recipe.
Right. And there are terms that refer to weights and measures or even techniques that we've lost. Mm-hmm. And that what we found, and Catherine can speak to this a bit as well, is that when you actually then start to try to use those recipes to make food, it often is a process of then having to go back and research those terms, mm-hmm. which then leads you into printed cookbooks of the era where some of that has been written down in more detail.
Right.
And it kind of works back and forth.
So once these cookbooks get transcribed, then are you looking through them? Are you looking for gems? Is someone actually, now that they can see all of this material online, is somebody doing research into these?
People, I think, will be doing research into these. People have done research into them in the past. Part of this is to make it accessible and see what happens with it. I think that one thing that we're finding with the transcription process, because it's open, anyone can participate, we start to find a community begin to develop around certain areas of interest. So with the Civil War diaries, we had some people who really took to heart some of the work they were doing. They got very involved with the stories of the individuals that they were transcribing. And I think that's likely to happen with the cookbooks as well, whether it's specific types of food or a specific time period. I think as this process just sort of plays itself out, we start to find people who gravitate towards certain things. We have a discussion forum as part of the site that allows people to ask questions. So it's a very open process, and we encourage people to participate and see what happens.
We're going to talk about some specific recipes in a moment. I do want to make a correction. We were also confused about what day Thanksgiving is. It's the fourth Thursday of November, and we've had some people correcting that. So you were correct in the first place, Catherine. I guess we all get too dependent
on our
flexible. Calendars.
Right.
Get too dependent on our calendars to tell us when things are. But thanks again for your corrections that you're sending in as well. And we'd love for you to join our conversation to talk about your traditions. There's a Karen from Mason City said, in my family, there's a dish that my aunt used to make, a raspberry jello salad made with port wine. It includes whole cranberries and pineapple and then frosted with cream cheese and sour cream and topped off with walnuts. It's tart and sweet all at the same time. She passed it along to my mom and now I make it. We can't have a Thanksgiving without it. I would guess that one probably doesn't go back past the 1950s, but that's a wonderful tradition. Thank you so much for sharing that, Karen. And you can share yours at 866-780-9100. And in your collection, Laura, I know that you not only have a collection of books, but you also have an audio collection of homemaking shows that were on the radio as well, right?
Right. Yeah, we've got the records of WY Radio, actually, from up until it went was combined. But it we've got the recordings of homemaking shows, and maybe not all of them, but yes, we do. And those are kind of interesting. I haven't actually listened to any of them.
Oh, you haven't? Okay.
No, I've looked at the transcripts from them, which are easy to skim when you're trying to put together something.
Right. Well, there was the Homemakers Half Hour on WOI Radio, and you also have some of the Kitchen Clatter shows that were on KMA Radio, right?
I don't think we have the actual... Do we... we have the magazines, actually, that were that were published from the from the radio.
You have the written right. collection.
Right. I think the audio is probably back in, I think it's Shenandoah where they were based. But yeah, we do have a collection of the magazines, and we've recently actually put those online as well. So if people are interested in looking
at them. Oh, wonderful. So people can go back and look at the recipes that were shared online. Starting that radio program started in 1926 and ran through 1986. So there are many, many years of recipes that were shared on that program.
Right.
Catherine, you brought a pie with you today. Tell me about this pie, because this is from one of those traditional recipes.
Sure, yeah. Well, I found this recipe from the recipe book of Alice Electa Picard, dated 1868. And this is from one of the books that you can find online at the DIY History. And I believe most of the book, it might entirely be transcribed now, but I happened upon this recipe for marble pudding or marble pie, and I made this for our historic foodie group that we're starting up, and just a couple weeks ago. And it's a traditional Thanksgiving recipe, but it's more English than American because it includes lemon and apples and custard. So I made a couple pies last night, and this was not the first time
you've made this recipe either.
No, I made it for the group, the historic foodie group. Mm-hmm. And if anybody is interested in coming to that, our next meeting is on December 11th, and we're actually meeting in Special Collections, and we're going to check out the Zathmary collection.
That's wonderful.
So I think
people are going to bring some food that they've prepared from some of the recipes that are online. Mm-hmm. And I think you're going for a holiday theme.
Yeah, we're going for cookies.
Yeah, for December. Yep. But then we're also in Special Collections going to have out some of the manuscripts that we've been talking about for people to look through. So you can see them online and look through them online, but you can actually come in then December 11th mm-hmm. and see the real thing, which is always a different experience.
Right, yeah. Right. Well, we're going to take a break here, and I'm going to try this Marlboro pie. It looks like it's fairly yellow. I mean, it looks like a custard pie, but you tell me there are apples in there, so I believe you.
Yep, there are.
All right, we'll try that in just a moment. We're talking about Thanksgiving through history and focusing on special recipes that have been passed down through generations. We'd love to hear what recipes make it to your Thanksgiving table every year. 866-780-9100. Greg Prickman is here from the University of Iowa Library, Catherine Mormond of Old Capitol Museum in Iowa City, and Laura Sullivan of Iowa State University Library. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We're talking about Thanksgiving through history and Thanksgiving traditions today. You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm talking with Greg Prickman. He is head of special collections at the University of Iowa Library. Laura Sullivan is here. She's an assistant archivist of special collections and university archives at Iowa State University's Library. And Catherine Mormon is education and outreach coordinator at Old Capitol Museum in Iowa City. And we spent the break trying this pie. And this is, again, it's called Marlboro pie.
Marlboro pie.
Marlboro pie. And it's an apple custard pie, which is unusual. I've never had anything quite like it. It's kind of a very understated sweetness.
Yeah. Yeah. And traditionally it's very English, being from the Duke of Marlborough. Traditionally a lemon custard apple pie. And I found another recipe on the Old Sturbridge Village website that their modern adaptation of it relates to Amelia Simmons's American Cookery cookbook from 1796. And that calls for, now I can read both recipes. I can read Amelia's and I can read Alice's too. So they're kind of different. And I made both of them. But they're still, the apple pie is kind of not your traditional American
Yeah, sliced apple pie.
Well, and how do you make it? Because the apple is so it's a, almost an apple flavoring, but there aren't apple chunks in it that I can see. So how do you do it?
So I was intrigued by the recipe because it calls for, and this is Alice's recipe, 9 tablespoons grated apple, 6 ditto sugar, 6 ditto wine, 6 eggs, 1/4 pound of butter, spice to taste, bake with an undercrust.
All
I had I had never grated apples before, so I thought, okay, I will try this. And sure enough, just grated the apples into the sugar and the wine and the butter and the eggs. And I did have the foresight to melt the butter, though, before mixing it all together. And then let it sit for a while, probably a good hour or two, before putting it in the undercrust. And then baking it at 350 for a good 35, 40 minutes.
Well,
so,
and you've made it several times, so
I've
obviously
it's
been a hit
now,
with you. But. And how do we know this is a traditional Thanksgiving pie?
Well, when I happened upon it in Alice's recipe book, it just intrigued me with the title Marble Pie. And then just doing some Googling online, I came across the recipe from the Old Sturbridge Village website, and they do traditional Thanksgiving every year, and they'll be cooking actually on the fireplace or at the fireplace.
Oh, wow.
The hearth.
Cool.
And so their website was very informational. Their recipe of marble pie dates back to Amelia Simmons's 1796 recipe.
Wow.
And that was the first cookbook that she published.
We've discovered already that you're not the only fan of marble pie in Iowa. John is on the line from Ames. Hi, John.
Fantastic. Hi there.
Hi. And when did you find out about this kind of pie?
You know, I was watching a pie show or something on PBS, and there was a place, I think back east somewhere, that they were making it, and it was just like your guest. It looked really fascinating because it was a different way to make the pie. So I got out an old James Beard recipe, who I think quotes Mrs. Simmons or one of the, you know, really old cookbook authors, and lost some skin on my knuckles shredding apples or grating them.
Me too.
I'd never done it before. But actually, after that, it's super easy. And you just dump it all into a crust, and it makes its own custard when you cook it. And so, my little secret, I guess, is I use sherry and I double the amount of sherry. So that's probably why it's really popular.
Okay.
And I took it to work. Like, you know, we do potluck things around work time or whatever. And so at holidays, I would take it to work, and it became the absolute favorite of one of my coworkers. And so every year she'd insist that I have to bring the Marlboro pie, and it's great.
Excellent.
So have you messed with the recipe at all? Or
yeah,
do you make it as you did the first time?
I did, except I add a little more lemon, and if the apples aren't really that tart, because I kind of like more sweet tart, and again, I put sherry and doubled the amount of sherry. And then I think the recipe called for like powdered sugar on the top. It's, you know, it's mostly just decorative, but it helps. So, yeah, it's great. Yeah. It's really, you know, and you can always combine different types of apples so you can get different flavors, whatever's good around the time you're buying your apples, because there's so many more and different kinds of apples you can get nowadays.
I'm curious, did you stew your apples?
No.
No, okay.
I just grated them fresh. And so I think they stay a little bit more shreddy, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
They have a little more texture. Because I did read, I think I wrote, actually looked one up online, and the another recipe kind of called for them almost to become like a apple sauce.
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, seemed like it'd be too mealy or something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So I like it. It's got a little bit of crunch, and it's sort of weird. It's between a fruit pie and a cream pie.
A custard. Really. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, the Amelia's recipe calls for stewed apples. And then Alice's recipe from 1868
calls for just grated apple. So I was curious.
Which is a lot easier. So, John, thank you so much for calling and sharing. Mm-hmm. That's a wonderful thing. Sue is on the line now from Pleasant Hill with a non-food related tradition. Hi, Sue.
Oh, just a minute. I'm sorry. I was listening to you on speakerphone.
All right. What's your tradition?
Well, one of my best friends, my chosen sister, has the most wonderful tradition. And years ago, she has five children. I have two. Our children are kind of interchangeable, really. And she put a large sheet on the table for a tablecloth and colored markers. And every year since, anyone that sits at the table or comes for dessert, we write what we're thankful for. And so we've grown as we've watched our children grow. They've grown in their thankfulness. When Game Boys came out, the boys were all thankful for opposable thumbs. And now that the patriarch of the family has entered hospice care, it'll be the first year that he's not able to write on the table at 92. But she says if her house burns, it's the only thing she'll rush in to save.
Oh, so she has a collection from all the years.
No,
nope,
it's the same tablecloth.
Oh, the same tablecloth. I get it. Okay.
Yeah, so the markers, uses are washable. They're permanent markers, Sharpie sort of thing. And now the children, now that they're all adults, they all come, and they've given thought to this, so they come with their notes written out.
Oh, nice. And do people date their entries?
Or? Yeah.
Oh,
that's
cool.
Part of it. So we've watched our families grow, and it's so heartwarming. And you sit there and laugh about what they wrote when they were 10, and now that they're almost 40. It's a wonderful tradition.
Oh, that is wonderful. So, Sue, thank you so much for sharing.
Have a great holiday, and thanks for a great program.
Well, thank you. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye. That's such a wonderful tradition. I'm sure she's going to inspire other people to give that one a try as well. We have this email from Esther. She says, my late sister Elise was so fond of my mom's lima bean casserole that she would pass up the other foods and fill her plate entirely with that at our family's Thanksgiving potluck dinner. She died in an accident 14 years ago, and my mom no longer cooks, so the tradition continues via my other sister or me as we furnish the beloved dish and remember Elise as it was served. Another tradition for me is that I make pumpkin pies from scratch each year with my kindergarten students. They help measure, mix, and stir, and we bake them in a toaster oven in the classroom. Even reluctant eaters declare that it is delicious. Esther, thank you so much for sharing that with us today. And Laura, let's talk about some of the other things that you've found in your collection that are Thanksgiving related, and back to the subject of corn. I know maybe you were stretching just a bit, but tell us about the corn train.
Yes, I was definitely stretching. I don't know if they ever
did
that on Thanksgiving.
Story.
Right. Perry G. Holden here at Iowa State began, basically it was the beginning of the extension service, and he went on trains to give and went throughout the state of Iowa to give lectures on corn and how to grow them and other aspects of growing corn. And it became extremely popular, I guess. They had several train cars, and they would be full of people in these different towns that they stopped at. It's kind of interesting how the Native Americans taught the pilgrims how to grow corn. And here in Iowa, we with our beginning of our extension service, we're also helping the people of Iowa with the experiments that were being done here at Iowa State and helping them out to improve their crop production in corn.
Yeah, taking that one on the road. So I'll ask each of you, what is on your Thanksgiving table? Is there a traditional recipe that makes it to your Thanksgiving every year? And Greg, you look the most shocked by the question, so I'll ask you first.
No, not shocked. I just think our table is fairly traditional in that I can't think of something that would be all that unusual. We have a sweet potato casserole that's quite popular. But beyond that, you know, it's pretty much what you would expect and what we all look forward to.
all these cookbooks getting transcribed, have you started looking for other recipes that might inspire you?
Well, I haven't yet, but there is a wealth of possibility, and It really kind of boggles the mind when you start reading through some of this. And I think the methods of cooking some of the food are not traditional in the sense that we would understand. Mm-hmm. We'd be out in the backyard on Thanksgiving, making the food. But there are some very interesting recipes. And, I think part of it is not just the food, but it's the technique that goes into making it. Mm-hmm. With methods that we just don't use anymore.
Yeah. Every year, the corn casserole / corn pudding is different.
Yeah.
But my mom swears she has this recipe that she that she works with, but it's different every year. And so, yeah, just with the mention of different methods, it's always funny how, just for my family, yeah, how things can change just from year to year by, oh, so-and-so is making this pie and, oh, we're not doing this year, but the corn pudding, and I've tried to take control of making the corn pudding. So it's consistent every year. But like my sister has some dietary restrictions, so she can't eat dairy. And so that's been a challenge, but a good challenge. But yeah,
what's your other than corn casserole or corn pudding, what's your favorite thing that is always on the table?
Goodness. I would probably have to say, yeah, with Greg, the sweet potato pie or sweet potato casserole. That's so tasty. Yeah. And then the pumpkin pie, of course.
Right.
But I'm hoping this year I'm bringing the Marlboro pie to my boyfriend's Thanksgiving. And I'm hoping his family likes it.
Cross my fingers.
Maybe start a new tradition.
Right, bring an old tradition back.
Yeah.
Laura, how about you?
Well, my family always had, the very traditional turkey dinner, and we actually raised our own turkey, so sometimes the turkey wouldn't fit in the oven. But it was, I always loved the, the dressing that my mother made was wonderful. It had different herbs and everything in it, so that's always my favorite.
And is there someone in your family that has to prepare the turkey? Is there someone who makes it in a particular way?
Well, we don't do it anymore, because we're all spread across the country, but yeah, my mom would always, actually my dad and mom would make the turkey together, so it was always fun to see them cooking together for Thanksgiving.
One of the things that I love about Thanksgiving meals, and it's been fun to talk about today, is how, although not everybody does something that would be considered to be a potluck, usually everybody who comes to a Thanksgiving dinner brings a dish, and that really does date back to how Thanksgiving was originally celebrated.
Right. Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think that would be the expectation, is that everyone would bring something. And you're right. I mean,
sure.
Everybody asks, if people are coming, what can I bring?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's frustrating if you can't bring anything.
Right.
You feel like, no.
Well, and with all
anything.
The...
I didn't bring anything.
For so many of us, this is, I've heard it referred to as the best meal that you'll actually make of the year, because so many families have lost a lot of their cooking traditions. But also with so many complicated dishes, it would be hard to, for someone, and obviously a lot of people do it, but it's hard to get everything done in one kitchen in one day.
Mm-hmm.
As
yeah.
well. So that
it's insane.
That potluck yeah. variety. So you're on a campaign to bring the Marlboro pie back, Catherine. Is there anything else that that you want to bring back that you've discovered in looking at old Thanksgivings?
Well, I'm really interested in the different methods that were used, and I feel as though over the years a lot of knowledge about things understood, like in Alice's recipe, she just says bake with an undercrust, and it's like, okay, what temperature? How long? Where's the recipe for the crust?
Right. Do I pre-bake the crust or do I bake the pie in the crust?
Yeah.
Right.
And I'm a very big fan of Gordon Ramsay and getting, people back in the kitchen and learning these techniques, because I think it's better to be cooking things at home and with the family, and I think it's a lot healthier that way. So I love Thanksgiving just because, when you get the family together and you're spending time in the kitchen, and food tastes better.
cooked, you know?
Well, we are out of time. Thank you all so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Laura Sullivan, Assistant Archivist, Special Collections at the University Archives of Iowa State University. Catherine Mormond, Education and Outreach Coordinator with Old Capitol Museum in Iowa City. And Greg Prickman, Head of Special Collections, University of Iowa Library. And happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, and Sarah Bowden. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Technical support today from Jason Burns. You can send us email anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.
To guide us, our God, with us joining, ordained.